So, hello, welcome to the Transmedia Podcast. I'm Natalie Rios, and you can find me online as @natigoico. And today we are here with the lovely Karen Palmer, who's a digital media artist and a filmmaker, and developed an interactive film about parkour, which combines neurogaming technology and film techniques, and it creates an immersive experience for the viewers. So, hello, Karen. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Natty. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. So, I think your project is really, really interesting because it's a film, but that actually depends on the viewer. You're going to explain a little bit more in just a few seconds, but I think the concept is really, really, it's really great. And we are very lucky and very happy to be able to showcase this project at the Conductor Conference, which is happening Friday, October 17th. So if you have a chance to come by and see Karen's project and just share with amazing people and talk about creativity and innovation and technology, please pass by and check it out. So, let's start by, Karen, can you explain us a little bit about the project? I mean, how would you describe it for people who haven't seen it? What is it about?
Good question. Okay, so my project simulates the experience of being a free runner. Okay. And I'll give you a definition of free running or parkour in case yes. your listeners aren't familiar with it. Parkour is an urban inner city sport that originated in France. And the goal of the sport is to go from the point A to the point B in the quickest, most efficient time possible. So whatever obstacles are in front of the person as they're making that route, that journey from A to B, they have to find a way over, round or under or through those obstacles.
Okay.
So it's very much a physical sport, but at the same time, it's psychological too.
Okay, that's really interesting.
So that's parkour. So my project, people might have seen parkour maybe on the James Bond film Casino Royale as an opening sequence
yeah.
or on YouTube or various Nike commercials, or it's quite popular at the moment. But what my film reflects is the psychological journey of overcoming fear, which is a regular, consistent process of doing parkour, because you constantly have to reevaluate your goals and your passions and what you need to transcend over in the physical world. But that also translates into your real life as well.
Yes, it's a mental process, of course.
That's it. It's a mental yeah. process, exactly. So that's what I'm reflecting in my film, but through the body.
Oh, that's so interesting. And what does it consist about? I mean,
so that's the concept. So technologically,
yeah.
with the film, it was important for me to find a solution, a technical solution, where the audience, the users, weren't observers of the film, but okay. they were very much a controller of the film, as if the person, the free runner in the film, was like an avatar that they were controlling. So with my film, you watch the free runners do a series of obstacles, and the user determines if the free runner will overcome the obstacles by their level of focus in their mind.
That's really good.
So what happens is we've created technology where they have a headset on, which measures the algorithms of their mind. And then that will determine the outcome of the film, whether the free runner passes the jump or fails the jump.
Okay, so it's like a branching narrative, right? Because then...
What narrative?
Branching narrative, in a sense, because, I mean, the film will depend on the focus of the person, right? I mean...
Yes, yeah.
And it, what happens if people fail to focus? What happens if they can't pass this obstacle?
Then the free runner also fails to focus, and the free runner will not make the obstacle.
Oh, that's really good. So, and how long does this experience take? And
it takes about 7 minutes to do the whole film. If you get, there's three levels, if you get all three levels. Some people only make the first level, so the experience is more like 4 minutes.
Okay, that's really good. And I know you've had the opportunity to display the project, for example, in the V&A. That's correct.
Yes.
And how was that experience? How people respond to it?
Okay.
How was it?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this project actually is my fourth interactive parkour project.
Oh, okay.
If I just let you know that I myself, as well as being a digital artist, I'm also a free runner myself. So I'm very much inspired by my own experience to recreate it for the viewer. So they are feeling switched on when they're connected to media. They're not disconnected, that the media is drawing them into the storyline. So my technology has created a form of storytelling in a way which has connected the viewer with the film very uniquely. So we had the event at the V&A, because this project was created specifically for the V&A as part of the Digital Design Weekend, as part of the London Design Festival, September 20th and 21st. We was there for 2 days, and in the area where I was, there was a few other participants, but most people came to my area. The feedback I got that over 900 people interacted in the area with the project, and my project in particular. And that meant not just walking past, but actually physically stopping and engaging. So the feedback, the level of interest was extremely high. And the V&A was very, very happy with that. They said that they got lots of tweets about the project and they got great feedback. But what was also unique was the individuals' feedback. It's not the volume of people, but the individuals, how people tended to stay there for like hours. Even like young children who are normally tend to have a very short attention span were there for like hours, because there's multiple outcomes of the film.
Yeah.
And people stand there and they'd watch and go, oh, I haven't seen that outcome. I didn't get to that level. And there's also lots of things going on. Like there's a really interesting music soundtrack from the international producer, Cesar Marchesh. And then there's also like a really great audio from the free runners from Parkour Generations, who are talking about their experience of overcoming fear, which led to a really interesting dialogue between people playing the film. There was a time where there was like 8 young kids just hanging around for like 2 hours just playing the film. And at one point, one was about 8, and he started talking to his mum saying, oh, but mum, isn't fear good for you? I thought fear was good because it protects you. And she said, well, sometimes it's not good for you, son, because it holds you back from doing what you want to do. And then they were having this really interesting conversation. And when the young boy left, the mother said, oh my God, I've never had that type of conversation with my son before. I didn't even know what to say because it was really interesting. And so it's kind of like the film really inspires people to think about these things that maybe they wouldn't have thought about, particularly as they're at the center of a user experience where they are so focused and vested that it's more than just watching a film, it's a total immersion in it.
Yeah, I think that's really great what you're saying, because it's like, okay, you created this film, but everyone has a different experience and they can actually reflect on it in a different way. So it's really, really...
That is such an interesting observation you made, Natty, because even when I give people the instruction at the beginning of film, like to focus, some people, everybody has their own unique way of focusing. Like, I directed some people, but some people, they realize that they've developed their own technique. Like one person, their way of focus would be to really look at every single detail on the page, like intellectually and visually, and say, that's a curtain, that's a step, that's the water, that's a tree, where other people imagine themselves emotionally being the free runner and feeling the ground, how it would feel when the person jumped or how it felt to jump in the air. So everybody, and some people just shut out the film and close their eyes and listen to the sound. And one lady said she imagined that she was doing Pilates, because when she's doing Pilates, she's very much in the zone. And everybody had a different response to how they focused. And what was really unique is that people tell me afterwards, who I spoke to, that once they became aware of their own unique focus technique, they were then able to use that focus technique in other areas of their life.
Yes, exactly. That's really interesting, because I haven't thought about how I focus. I know sometimes I'm focused. I know when I am, but I don't know how I get there. So
exactly.
I guess with your film and, you know, this interactive experience, then people can actually reflect on, okay, this is my best technique to focus.
Yeah.
So you are creating something else as well. You are helping people to realize how to focus and how to train themselves to do that. Right.
You're absolutely, no, 100%. If I just tell you a little bit more about myself as well, is that my background is that I used to make music videos, and things like TV commercials. I used to work within not just a commercial industry, but music industry in particular. And okay. I found that it was very, for what I wanted to achieve, I found I was quite limited because the mainstream music industry at that time in particular was very focused on portraying a very kind of traditional message of, you know, making people buy into a lifestyle of, you know, you want that car or you want that girl or you want that length hair or you want to have that shaped body. Yeah. And I was very much feeling aware that I didn't want to be part of that machine, that I want people to really find out who they truly are and develop that their own unique sense of self. I don't want to be part of the machinery telling them, no, you have to be this type of person and you have to look this type of way, because I don't think that's how it should be. Okay. So I think I'm very aware that media is such a potential, powerful tool. And I see media as a form of transformation and empowerment. So it's really important for me to develop a form of entertainment where people are empowered and leave it even more aware of themselves than when they started the game.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really nice observation, because in here you are actually using technology for that, which I think is great. I mean, actually, you wanted to empower people and the solution came with the technology as well, with interactivity and technology, and that allowed you to, you know, inspire and empower.
Yes, inspire and empower. Those are a lot of the two words I was using a lot at the V&A, because that is really, I think media has so much potential to do so much things. And I feel that's what I would like to leave people with, the fact that my project has inspired and empowered them. And you also touched on technology, and I want to say about wearable tech is that there's a big kind of trend in the last few years that's becoming even more popular with wearable tech, from like the Nike Fuel Band to Fitbit to where Apple's going with the iWatch. And I feel this almost like obsession with data, and I'm very curious as to, you know, what is fueling this and what is the objective of people's personal objective of collating all this data. And I'm really wanted to use wearable tech in a way which would very simply, through visuals, empower people. I really wanted to use it in a way which is really a really quick fix, a really quick result. And it was something where people could just improve themselves very swiftly and give them a sense of awareness. So using something which is very kind of on trend, but in a way which is a little bit more futuristic.
Yes, exactly. I think that's a really good point, because you say that, you know, we are obsessed in a way with all this data, but what do you do with it? So that's, I think it's really interesting about your project, that you are using this data actually to create an immersive experience and not just to, you know, give this
information
and that's it.
I mean, I don't like to, because everybody's different and I don't like to kind of judge, but sometimes I talk to people and I'm like, okay, you've done so many steps today, like 3,000 or 5,000 things on your pedal thing that you've measured. That's really interesting. But, you know, it's like, you know, I'm really not sure why we're having this conversation. You know, it's like, I mean, it's what I like to cycle. I do like to measure how much cycling and check how quick I've been. But sometimes you get so caught up in that you kind of miss the whole point of, you know, how did it feel when you were cycling? You know, did it feel beautiful? The wind in the air. Did you see the swans as you cycled along? Or were you just so focused on getting this time? Yeah. That you just missed the whole point of the whole cycle. So, you know, I'm really, rather than kind of, sometimes it's easy to judge people or kind of say, you know, what it's kind of, I put those things back on myself and say, okay, what am I doing? And it's like, what am I doing with my data? And, you know, how would I optimally like to use my data? And I'd like to inspire and empower. So let me do it. Let me make these projects and, you know, see if they cut it in a way.
Exactly. That's amazing. can you tell us a little bit about the experience of choosing this technology? How was it? I mean, was it like you knew what experience you wanted to create and then you investigated on the technology, or was it the other way around? Did you investigate the wearable technology and then the story came? How was it?
That's a really interesting question. So as I said, this is my fourth in my series of interactive parkour films. The first one was just a very kind of playful interaction of people controlling the film aesthetically. I just wanted to give people a gaming sense to the parkour film. Okay. The second, that film was called The Way, where it was like people trying to find their way. The second film was called Evolution, and that was much more kind of psychological. That was commissioned as part of the cultural lead up to the Olympics. The third film was called Sinks of One, and it became very much a gaming experience, a full-on. I created an app where you had to be really, really quick, or the person wouldn't jump, you controlling the app, or you had a series of challenges or a series of balancings through the app. So the app controlled the film. So with this one, I kind of wanted to fuse the psychology and the gaming aspect. And I did look at a lot of different tech, like the Nike Fuel Band and the Fitbit, and Philips had like an emotional reader, your senses. And I did spend a lot of time researching it. And I also spoke to different companies and researched, and then I came up with this movement in that I'm starting to see originate, particularly in San Francisco, as there's lots of startup companies creating these type of headbands. And the concept, the word that kind of came from San Francisco that I hadn't had anyone mention in UK was neurogaming, and they have like neurogaming conferences over there. And I thought, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. And there's a couple of startups who have been creating headbands which were able to feed back to people their data levels on when they're focused in the day and when they're at their most efficient. And I was like, that's really cool, but imagine if you could attach that to media and entertainment. That to me is the future of entertainment. That it to me, that's almost like Minority Report stuff. Like us in like 30 years, we're kind of too busy to train and too busy to go out. So we kind of have to do both at the same time. So that's kind of, you watch my film, but you're training your mind and you're entertained, and so you've done two things. It's like the ultimate in multitasking. So I was like, this is what I always try to be a couple of years ahead of the curve, and I thought this is really where entertainment is going. When I saw the wearable tech and I saw my entertainment, I said, this is really the future. So I did a lot of research, and I spoke to the tech people. So I with this project, I was working with Brunel University and their computer science department, and the Professor Hongying Meng, who's head of computer science, his team down there. And we worked with the students, Christoph in particular, and another programmer, Matt from Skyfish Productions, to create this solution. So we kind of had an idea, but we looked at lots and lots of different potentials. And then we kind of had to find an option that worked within the parameters of what we were trying to do.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And how was working, I mean, writing a film, but with technology and with a team? Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Okay, so that's a really unique process,
Yeah, I can
because
imagine.
the team, I was so fortunate to have the best team ever. I'm not joking, they were a phenomenal team of people, and it was about, I guess it was maybe 15 people including the talent in front of the film. And it's really, you're doing two productions. I had to project manage, because I was digital artist director, producer, project manager.
A lot of
And
work.
yeah, so I had to make sure it was like military precision, that I basically had a film production and a tech production running simultaneously, and they had to feed into each other, because I had a certain time frame of like 5 months, and they needed to be working together. Like even when I made the film, I'm thinking about what the technical solution would be and how we would interact with that, and what the user experience would be. I couldn't like make the film and then say, oh, how are we going to make this interactive? It
Yeah,
had to,
exactly.
you had to kind of, all these things had to be spoken about, talked about, discussed, storyboarded, then the workflow, interactivity created, and to see this is going to work, how would this work? Then maybe go back and change some of the narrative on the story, then to reevaluate the user experience. All these different factors. And even with the film, things which you wouldn't even consider, the fact that I feel what I'm doing is very kind of hyper modern, like almost semi-futuristic, and that I wanted the film to have that look. I didn't want that film to just look like a normal film. I wanted it to look like super modern. So that had the impact in terms of the kind of locations I chose, because I didn't want to use the traditional locations in London, because I'm not making a traditional film.
Yeah, of
You know, and
course.
also with the stylist, I said to the stylist that with the clothing, I want be able to people to move very efficiently, but look very modern, look very futuristic, without being cheesy, you know? You know, how would people look in 10, what would people wear in 10 years? Because they want to move super efficiently, they don't want to be hanging around, but that also looks very classic and minimalist. You know, all these factors that you have to kind of bring together to create a visual that connects with your tech. You know, you don't want to have this disconnected film and this disconnected tech, and there's no, it's something with the people, they just, it doesn't resonate. Sometimes people won't even know why they don't like something, well, they just say it just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So visually, as a filmmaker, I have to kind of bear the spirit of what I'm creating in mind for the visuals, but then also work with the tech people to make sure that the story is a really complete user experience, that it's something which people can connect with almost emotionally, but through tech.
Exactly. I think that's a really interesting thought, because you are not only creating a visually appealing film, but you also have to create something that, you know, that it's, it produces an emotion and connects people, but not only through the film, but also the technology. So did you develop a technique or something, or what, was it more like experimental, or did you have, like, you know, the storyboard and you had all these points of interaction, and then, or was it more experimental, like, okay, on the go, you were making changes, and how was that process?
That's a really interesting question. I think that's a really interesting question. The technique I developed was that I had to kind of put myself at the center of the whole project, like a nucleus. Yeah. And I had to constantly be making sure that my communication with my team was really always on point, so that I have a strong sense of vision of what I want, but I listen really well to my team, so that it's like there's 15 people, but we're all completely connected. Like, I almost had to lose my ego completely, so that if I explain to every single person the vision and said, this is what I want, and then say, let's do it, what do you think? And then they might say, it's really cool, but what about if we try it like this, because I understand what you're trying to do, but maybe if we do that it will come over better. And say, for example, with the free runners, I said to the free runners, tell me how, I said to one free runner, what the concept of the film is, that there's two free runners being chased, and one is being chased by their fear, and that was the concept I gave them. I said, the fear is chasing you, and you have to outrun your fear, and will you be able to outrun your fear? And then my free running friend Yao said, well, actually, I don't try to outrun my fear, because my fear is my friend, it protects me. But it's, if I let it control me, then that's the problem. I have to master it. It doesn't unmaster me. And I had to go, wow, that's amazing. Like, that's your personal experience. Let's put that in the film. That's not what I put on the storyboard. I put the chasing. So I have the chasing, but let me record what you just said on my Zoom, so that we can, that we've kind of changed that essence of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And then it becomes a slightly different narrative, but it's just even more powerful, because it's his truth in a way.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's really good, because when you are working with a team, then everyone collaborates and you can actually make it better, I guess.
You can, but it's really interesting, because no two people collaborate in the same way. And, like, I've worked with people who are like, I'm the boss.
Yes, exactly.
No? And it's like, I've been in situations where I've been like, well, we're all the boss. And then sometimes that's worked against me, because some people have tried to take over my project. Even if not consciously, they try to muscle in, like they want to control it. So you have to define your own kind of like parameters of, okay, we're working as a team, but you kind of lose your ego, but you have to know when to say, no, this line's drawn now.
Yeah, but, exactly, the limit.
But but the thing is, I was so fortunate with the team that it was a pure collaboration, where I said, this is what I feel, what do you guys feel? And then sometimes people would like text Slack, go to me on Slack at like 11 at night, oh, I was thinking about this, maybe this would work better. I'm like, oh my God, this guy's probably brushing his teeth going to bed and he's thinking about my project.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm thinking, I thought I'm the only one that does that. But it's like it's resonating and they're enjoying it, they're part of it. So the team, me being at the center, knowing what I want, but also selecting a brilliant team who I can trust, and respecting each other, and that it's kind of like it's living, you know, that someone feeds to you, then you feed back, and then it's kind of, then you feed that to some, because maybe somebody's the free runner might say that, and then I might feed something in the workflow of the interactivity, and then that might feed back in the, to the graphic design girl, Ellen, that, oh, I'm thinking that with the focus of the person's, we have to put a barometer on the top of the corner, which shows your focus level. And traditionally that tends to be like a bar of like from green to red. And I said, you know what, that's too traditional. I want the focus, the barometer focus to be a character, like a shape of a person. And it's filling them up, like it's filling their focus, is like their energy in their body. So that when you're completely focused, your body's full of energy, you know? That's how I see it. And she's like, yeah, yeah. And then I showed her like on Pinterest, loads of little pictures, and she went away and created it. But, you know, and it's, she made it animated. And it's like, great. Yeah, and it's like, wow. How you brought that to life is ridiculous. Like I had this, you kind of took it to a whole new level. So it's kind of like you, but that's kind of coming from the conversation of free runners where they might say they feel empowered. And I talked to the graphics girl saying, how can we make them look empowered? And, you know, it's just this continual flow of communication. I think because I'm quite, as you can probably tell, I like talking.
that's everybody good.
Has their own kind of style of working, but yeah. I like to talk and listen to my team a lot, because I find that that's the best way to kind of engage.
Yeah, that's true. And I think you know, if everyone is in the same wavelength, then it's you know, and everyone respects each other, and yes, they collaborate with each other, then the outcome is really good, and you are very happy with the outcome, so of course it worked.
But also being like very specific in my research that like I created Pinterest boards for the stylist, Pinterest boards for the graphic designer, you know, Pinterest board. Everybody had a different Pinterest board in different areas, a Pinterest board for the tech people, you know, whatever, however, way of communicating or expressing, so that there's not like me going, oh, I'm thinking it's like this. You know, there's visual references and people can put their visual references up there as well. And I can go, no, that's not what I was thinking. Or, oh, that's great. I didn't even think that.
Yeah, so exactly. That's really interesting. You use Pinterest a lot, and it helped you with the project.
Pinterest, because I'm visual. Yeah. And saying to somebody, you can't communicate, even though I love talking, you can't communicate through talking what's in your head. If you're creating a visual medium, you need to show visual references.
Yeah.
That's through me as a digital artist. That's how it works. And that is, as you were asking about techniques, that's a technique I've developed over my last two projects. That the DOP, when I meet him, I've already sent him the link to the Pinterest board. So when we sit down and we talk, we're hitting the ground running, and he's like going, I was thinking we could use this camera, or he may say to me, the images you showed me were very wide and very high up, so we need to shoot high up in London, whereas most of the locations in London are very narrow and very dense. Mm. So I didn't even interpret. I just gave him lots of pictures of the scene, of the kind of look I wanted, and he was unable to pinpoint. This is Anthony Gurner, the DOP, is able to pinpoint that in his expertise, that that's high up and that's wide shots. So then I was able to go back and go, okay, right, the locations person, this is the type of locations we need.
That's really, really interesting. And about the visuals, because you said something that I think it's worth commenting more. How is the visual? I mean, you have the screen, you have the film, and then you have this little graphic that tells you how focused you are, right?
Mm-hmm. So do you want me to explain the user experience in a bit
of
detail?
Yes, exactly. Okay. I think so it's really interesting.
What happens is you have a huge monitor, because I really don't want my experience to be small. I want it to be very immersive. So at the V&A, it was like a colossal monitor. And then I also have like seats, because I want people to become comfortable in the experience. I don't want to have to stand up. I want to be relaxed. And they sit down, and then they have this, they're presented with the iPad. And on the iPad is the app that will give you the option to play the film and give you a little bit of information about it. And then as you play the film, in the top left-hand corner, you have a character which gives you a barometer in 10% increments of how focused you are or not. And it also gives you a few words as a guide saying, focus more, or focus on your breathing, or you're doing really well, or you're unstoppable. It gives you that indication. Mm-hmm. And then what you do is that you're watching this film for like, you can now put the iPad down because your focus is on the film, and you're watching the film, and you, for the first 2 minutes, you're just learning to become familiar with your own focus technique so that as you're watching the film, you're aware with this barometer, so you can just see what's working for you or not working for you as a technique. And after 2 minutes of testing, you will be told that you have an obstacle. Now your gauge will be measured. And then you will have a series of three obstacles. And if your focus level is not above a certain threshold, because they get higher and higher each time, the free runner will not overcome the obstacle. And each obstacle gets more and more daring. So the first obstacle is just a small jump. The second one is a much higher jump that maybe if he fell, he might break his ankle. And the third one is like a three-story jump that if he fell, he would die. So, you know, it kind of shows the level of focus that you have to have. So the threshold goes higher and it gives people that sense of that they really have to become immersed in what they're doing.
Yes, exactly. And it's like you're training them as well on how to live the experience.
Yes, exactly. And then also at the end, which is quite crucial of the experience, you will get a diagram which will give you an indicator of your focus levels and will give you a number and will give you a graph letting you know what your number was in terms of the focus. So some people got like, maybe they got 65 out of 100 and maybe they would have then got to level two. And some people, if they just got 55, they probably didn't get past level one. But then they'll be able to see like a graph showing them of like going up and down, showing them their level of focus.
That is really great. And did that come from the beginning? I mean, from the beginning, you wanted to show this to the user, or that something you decided later on when you had the technology? I mean, like the graph at the end?
Good question. The graph was at the end was not something which I had factored in, but it was something that when we were doing the user experience, I think, I don't know if it was me or it came out of a conversation. Sometimes there's something with these conversations, you don't even know whose idea it was. And the programmer, Christoph, in terms of making the experience more user satisfied, that they can, it's kind of complete. And they've had this experience and they got some kind of measurement, some kind of tactical gauge to show that they are, just give them a proper indicator of, you know, what their level was. And that also this is quite crucial, actually. All my kind of interactive films that I create are designed to be a collective experience. They're not for someone to put a headset on and be alone. It's for people to sit around together and watch this and have different interactions and different responses that they can talk about. So it was really important, not in like a competitive way, but just for people to see at the end, well, maybe people, everybody's different, but just to see, oh, I got 65, oh, you got 70. Oh, look at your graph. Look how different your graph is to mine. You were really focused at the beginning. I was really focused at the end. You know, it's just a really interesting thing in forms of conversation to have with people and have this sense of awareness and say, oh yeah, you are that type of person. You do kind of halfway through, you do kind of like zone out and then you kind of come back. That's really interesting to be aware of.
Yeah, that's true.
So it really was, it's something which just kind of developed within the user experience. When you do these things, you kind of have an idea. And then some things you never thought of become amazing. And some things you thought were going to be central just don't work.
It's very experimental at some point.
You have to really, and also you asked as well at the beginning about how was that at the V&A. And it's like when we created the project, we finished it maybe a week or two before the V&A and we tested it ourselves and was like, that works. But then when we went to the V&A and we had hundreds of people playing it, we were like, whoa, like now we know what works and what doesn't work. It's not like three people who've been working on it for 5 months. This is people who've walked off the street and have no idea and are really giving us really like real feedback. If they say it to you, they're frowning and scratching their head, or they're just like smiling, you just know immediately whether something works or something doesn't. So from that, like there's a problem with the trains that weekend, and we London Underground, and it took like an hour and a half to get there and back each day from the V&A. Almost for the whole time, me and the programmer were like discussing and dissecting the project and saying, wow, what worked well and what didn't work well. And, you know, even like a very small thing, like say with the thresholds, when we did the thresholds, we set the first one to be 60, 70 and 80 of like your mental focus, because I was like, I don't want everybody to be able to get the last level. I want it to be something where people would hang around to see who would get the last level. But we realized quite after a few hours of the first day that that was almost too high, 60, 70, 80. So we had to drop it to, I think, 50, 60, 70, because people were actually getting frustrated that they couldn't get past the first level.
Yeah.
So we wanted the people to, most people to get past the first level, and then some to get past the second, and then a few to get past the third. And we had to drop that threshold. So there was lots of things that, well, when the users were using it, we were like, oh, this has to change. Otherwise, people are going to feel disconnected. They don't feel like they're part of this experience.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something that it's really tricky about the interactive projects, because you have to make, sometimes you have to make adjustments, because, you know, it's like, okay, this is too high or this is too low, and I think I need to readjust the values in order to create a better experience, and people won't get frustrated because they can't, you know, get to this point. So, yeah, that's part of the process of creating these interactive experiences.
I tell you, my goodness, it's like I'm coming from a pure filmmaking background, and my projects demanded by their very nature that if I wanted to simulate this type of experience, they had to become interactive. So it's kind of like, it's two projects that I've made. I've made a film project and an interactive, and I'm learning through the interactive that you cannot test it enough.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to have so many things that you didn't expect to not work, and so many things that you didn't expect to work, that you and some of it as well, you can't, you like, can I get 500 or several hundred people in advance to test my project? Maybe no, but at the V&A it's going to happen, but I have to be able to respond quickly, like say to the Christoph, the programmer, go into the computer and change the thresholds at lunch, you know, because then now we know that it needs to go lower. You know, so there's things, we're still tweaking it now from that experience, because as well, the V&A, it's a public space. It's different to me going to Brunel University and sitting in the professor's office, where it's completely like a controlled environment. So all those factors, again, can have an impact upon your focus.
Yes, of course.
So there's so many things that you just have to be constantly, you cannot be lazy and do interactivity. Because just
that's a really good thought.
you have to be aware of what you've created, and you have to be able to... but it's interactive. You have to be able to, I don't know, you have to be able to gauge and monitor your reaction to your own project objectively. You can't go, well, it's finished. It's only finished when you've done all the festivals and you've been to all the events and you've got all the feedback and you start another one, because somebody somewhere is going to give you feedback which you're going to go, wow, you know, 6 months after you've done it, which you're going to go, oh wow, yeah, I never thought of that.
That's great. Exactly, because it's about audience engagement. It's about engaging your viewers. So
it's about audience engagement. It's not like a traditional linear film.
Exactly.
You know, it's an audience engagement, and we're dealing with like emerging technology, and it's constantly changing. You know, like there's like a new iOS 8 for the iPhone operator. It's like things are constantly changing, and as the people's interaction with their iPhone changes, their interaction with interactivity changes, you know?
Exactly.
So people have different expectations and different demands because tech is moving so quickly. But the things with my project is that because I'm connecting storytelling and tech, it's got that emotion at the middle. So you cannot afford, everything connects back to the feeling and the characters and the journey. So it's important not to kind of forget that within the user experience as well.
That is great. I think that's a really good way to wrap it up, because it's like a reflection. But I want to do a final question, like what's next for Karen Palmer?
Well,
what type of experience do you want to create? I mean, is it going to be interactive, immersive? What's next?
What's next is two things, I think. One is I'm still talking, I'm still in conversations, because we were such a great, all the team was so brilliant that we all wanted, I'm working with everybody again on the next one,
which
includes Brunel University. We're very excited with what was created. So I would continue the relationship with Brunel University and continue to develop the technology of neurogaming and storytelling, and just expand. Like I want to develop the narrative side more and develop the technology side more.
Okay.
So I'm now kind of in research and development of
film and also tech to develop that next journey for the next character, the next user experiences. So, and the second thing is that I really would, I'm seeing, because a lot of young people are really gravitating to what I'm doing, that, and they're really highly curious, really, really interested to kind of bring this kind of innovation approach to media to young people in some way. Because a lot of them seem to be like, oh, I want to, how could I do that? And I want to do something like that. You know, it's kind of like, you know, they on their iPad, they're playing games. They go to the cinema, they watch films. And they're like, wow, what you're doing is kind of connecting them both. I want to do something like that. Or their peers have come to me and said, can you teach my children to approach what they're doing like that or find a way? So working with young people and working, creating another project is the two directions what I'm going into next.
And that is great. Well, I'm very excited to see what's next.
Then. Not me too.
Well, Karen, thank you so much. It was really, really...
Oh, sorry.
Oh, it's fine.
It's my trailer.
A little music for the end.
No, it's my trailer. I had it queued up so that I could give you the link.
Exactly. So where people can see a little bit about your project and how can they find you online? And well, I will share a link, of course,
I'm sure you will share a link. The blog for the project, the Sync Self project. I don't know if I mentioned that the project's called Sync Self. The project's called Sync Self because with free runners, they constantly have to, imagine if we were like mobile devices ourselves. It's like, are we running the latest operating system? Like, are we running iOS 8, for example, if I was an iPhone, or am I still running iOS 6? And with free runners, they have to constantly be downloading the latest update of themselves to be able to overcome fear. So my project's called Sync Self. That project at the beginning was Sync Self 2. And the blog for the project is theblog.syncself.co.uk. I also, if you search me, Cam Palm, on YouTube, I have my YouTube channel and there'll be a Sync Self 2 trailer there. And the company that I do my productions from is IF, which is interactive film, but it's also the concept of if, in terms of, you know, imagine if, infinite potential. It's just about like having that approach to life. And that is i-films.co.uk. Or you could just email me at contact@karenpalmer.co.uk as well.
That is great.
But okay. I'll send you all the links as well, so you'll have all that.
Yes, of course. Well, thank you very much. It was really nice. And please, if you want to see this amazing project of Karen, join us at the conference, and if you can, on October 17th. And we are very happy and very excited to experiment it ourselves and maybe see how focused I am.
I will find out. I'll give you the data at the end.
Okay, thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you so much, Natty.
Bye.